Nancy Goodman Torpy and Peter Torpy are hosts of a weekly internet podcast called Eyes on Success. The Torpys both have PhDs in physics and retired from Xerox Corporation after over 25 years in corporate research. Nancy is sighted and Pete is blind. During 2014, they posted discussions about living with a low-vision person, featuring interviews with Peter's mother, sister, children, and in-laws, followed by an open conversation between Nancy and Pete about compromises and accommodations they've made in their marriage. The two programs have been condensed and edited into one presentation for this ILVSG session. I hope it will bring an appreciation of how, with acceptance and a few simple adjustments on everyone's part, there is no reason why a blind or low-vision person cannot be a successful and integral part of the family. This is a program that will benefit all parties, either as an introduction to new information or as a reinforcement of values and practices already in place. We're happy to welcome the Torpys as presenters this month.
Hi, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
We interviewed several people who've lived with Pete in various capacities and gotten their perspective and recollections. When Pete and I met, we were each living on our own separately. We had been through the roommate thing in college and graduate school, but we had jobs, we had our own apartments. And, you know, one of my tendencies was when I took my shoes off, that's where they stayed, wherever that was on the floor. And then Pete started spending time in my apartment. And unfortunately, every once in a while, he wanted to walk where I had left my shoes. And so by stages, I figured out not to do that. And so the first thing I did was I'd take off my shoes and I'd put them against the wall so at least he wouldn't trip over them. And then they'd go somewhere in the closet. Now they're like every shoe is where it belongs because I've been living with Pete so long that everything's organized.
And in fact, we ran into some of this, particularly when our kids were younger. As you can imagine, children have a tendency to leave things all around the floor and their toys just scattered around. Well, that wasn't a good thing in our house because either the toy was going to break or Daddy was going to break. So we had a little trick called Daddy's Bag.
Well, if we left our toys out and you happened to trip on them, they'd go in a big paper bag in your closet on the top shelf.
And how effective was that?
I don't know. How effective was it?
Well, the floors were certainly clear. Did it stop you from playing with your toys?
It's okay. You've already admitted
it. Until I found out where the bag was.
Yeah.
Then I just had to make sure to put them back in the bag when I was done.
So the funny thing is, I didn't learn about that until years later when our kids were a little bit older and were willing to admit that they had actually found my bag during the day, taken their toys out, and then put them back again. I mean, now our kids are in their 20s, so we can all laugh about this. But it worked, and their toys never broke, and I never broke.
Another situation we ran into was when my parents first met Pete, and they didn't have a lot of experience with blind people. So they also had to learn not to leave things in places where the thing or Pete could get hurt.
Well, one day not too long ago, he almost fell down the steps in our house, and that would have been a disaster had he done so. We really would have felt guilty about...
If it was here, there, or anywhere.
Well, but we would have felt guilty about not having a gate up. I mean, here we thought this man could do anything. When he almost fell down the stairs, that scared me.
But we do appreciate the fact that you no longer put things at the top or bottom of the stairs like you used to.
And they're pretty conscious about things like that now. Although it is difficult if you're not living with a blind person from day to day, you know, sometimes you forget about the things that need to be done. I know when they came to visit once, Phoebe, Nancy's mom, was leaving cabinet doors open, which is a real disaster for me, you know, walking into them. And as she pointed out when I mentioned it to her, she has a problem with that too because she has trouble seeing out of one side. And so, you know, everybody needs to be a little bit careful for everybody else.
When Pete was a kid, although he was legally blind and had to go to a school for the blind because his vision was quite low, he actually still had enough functional vision to get around without a cane. He lost most of the rest of his vision after one more operation right after graduating from college, so he never really lived with his mother or sister after becoming functionally blind. And they took him to graduate school and left him there and let him, you know, succeed on his own there. And then they had to drop him off in Rochester for his first job.
Yes. Went up to Rochester. He got a beautiful apartment. He just was so independent. I was just amazed. Going to the stores, crossing the streets. I kept thinking of him when the weather was bad.
Well, she still gets nervous when we travel to other places.
I like when you go away on vacation and you come back home and you're describing. You're describing, you think you've seen it. Now she's telling you about the mountains, the water, the sky, the trees. And she took you along and she told you all those things.
Now she gives me a good enough visual picture that I can describe it to other people as if
right.
I was...
As if you were there.
Yeah, as if I saw it myself.
Yeah.
I was there.
You were there.
And then I'm glad that towards the end he got the best wife.
And I did get the best wife.
Thank you.
We met when we were around 30, when we had both had more or less established careers or just started our careers as physicists and had our education behind it. So there were a lot of problems out of the way.
And I learned in a hurry that Pete could do pretty much anything besides drive and use power tools.
And she always encouraged me to do everything I could. And it really wasn't a big deal in our relationship, the blindness. I mean, we always found ways around doing things. And, we started out being good buddies and became better friends and eventually got married.
And, you know, I've learned over the years that although being blind doesn't make anything easier, it also doesn't make everything harder. And so we kind of treat it as a nuisance and make accommodations where necessary. So, like, if I need to go to the grocery store to do the shopping, Pete doesn't stay home and do the house fix-it projects, or vice versa, but he's a nice guy, and he always offers to help or come along with me, and he's the best cleaner-upper after I get sawdust all over the place.
Well, and we also work together in a lot of our fix-it projects. I mean, I do what I can to help. Sometimes Nancy needs some more muscles to do some things, and I'll do that. But we work together and share some of those jobs. As we tease people, we do a lot of computer support for people. And as we tease people, Nancy's the hardware support, and I'm the software support. I mean, in fact, many blind folks will do hardware also, but that just happens to be what we're good at and we enjoy. And that's how we split that particular type of job, as we split, other types of jobs around the house.
So, of course, not everybody was as comfortable with the concept of me marrying a blind person initially. Here are my parents, my dad, Merrill, and my mom, Phoebe.
What did you think when I first told you I was going to marry a blind man?
Probably that you were crazy.
We thought you were very brave and very stupid. And then you want to live with him for a year first to see what it was like.
Absolutely.
Instead of just getting married right away. In those days, that was pretty shocking for somebody of our age to think that way, actually. But it was being done, and we thought that would be a good idea for you to decide whether or not, I mean, the man was obviously somebody you wanted to marry, but we thought that you were putting yourself in a situation where you were going to live an entire life with him, and it was going to be difficult, and you should learn first what it was like before you actually made the final step.
Did you ever regret that you didn't do that?
No.
That's good. I have to say,
I'm still married to him.
Look at that.
Having gotten to know Pete over the years, I can understand you wanting to marry him.
So that was our parents. Then we went off to Colorado again to visit our son Brian, and this time our daughter Allison met us out there, and we sat them down to record a conversation with them.
Do you have any particular stories that you think are interesting that related to me being blind?
I don't know. I mean, it probably taught us a better sense of independence and ability to be able to do whatever you want. You know, when people would ask us, could you do anything? And we would, could you do such and such? And the answer was always yes.
Well, I think in some sense, you guys developed a little bit more responsibility. You know, if we were out somewhere, especially if it was just you guys and Dad, most times if it's a parent and a five-year-old, the parent is guiding the five-year-old. But there were times certainly, I was there watching, but there were times when either one of you was guiding a parent instead of the other way around.
Yeah, well, I think you guys were very responsible taking care of me and made sure Dad wasn't going to break in dangerous situations. And even if you wanted to be doing something else, like playing with your friends or just not bothering, you'd always come over and help me out or show me how to do something or just make sure I was safe. And I thought you kids did a very good job of that. You haven't broken me yet. So what couldn't I do?
See?
Well, I think that this is different for us than for anyone else because that's the only way we've ever known you. It's only, that's how we grew up.
You ever wish it was different, though, or it'd be less frustrating if Dad could see?
Sometimes it's awkward when I have to wait for you in the bathroom. But when you're waiting for someone to finish peeing and you're just standing behind the line of urinals and have to watch to see when they leave, it's a little awkward.
Was that your biggest frustration with me being blind?
Maybe.
You didn't like being my bathroom buddy when you were younger, did you?
I mean, it's just awkward. I feel like everyone else thinks I'm strange.
Fortunately, those things are a little bit easier now as the kids have matured a little bit more. But we've had some interesting times.
Laughter aside, we actually parlayed this into a really quality conversation, and the kids even asked us some questions that they'd never asked before.
Were you worried that we would be born blind?
A little bit. We had you checked out because glaucoma could be a congenital disease. We had you both checked out by the eye doctor when you were within weeks of being born.
On the other hand, we already knew that although being blind doesn't make anything easier, you can always, you know, get through life and find ways of doing things if you can't see, but it's a lot easier if you can.
True.
So we wanted to make sure that we give you guys the best chance we could.
Well, I wouldn't change anything. I am perfectly happy. Things worked out okay for me and the family, and I'm happy.
So, Pete, we've been talking to everybody else around and about you. Do you have any comments as a blind parent, blind husband?
Well, all I can say is, that we tried in general to make it as natural as we could for the kids and for me to participate as much, you know, as being as a sighted dad would in their lives. So when it came to things like, you know, a young boy would want to play baseball and ball games and stuff, we figured out ways of doing that. And, we'd have Brian running down just yelling, "Dad, Dad, Dad," and I'd throw a pass to him so I'd know where he was, and we'd run intricate patterns and things. We had our basketballs with little buzzers and bells in them. I helped them with their homework just like any other dad or mom would, and they just had to be a little bit more careful about telling me exactly what was on the page or what they were writing down, so they had to give a little bit more feedback. But, you know, that was probably a good skill for them to learn anyway.
But as you heard the kids say, you know, for them, that was normal. That was all they knew, and you know, no complaints.
Well, we're going to talk about ourselves and how we work together, me being blind and Nancy being sighted, and how that impacts our lives and what we do. Even as we were dating, we talked about the balancing act and compensating for each other, and there were certain accommodations that had to be made. When we went most places, I didn't do the driving, but there were other things also. When we got to know each other better and we were often dancing with each other at the dances, as I recall, I did have some vision and contrast made a big difference to me. So how did you take advantage of knowing that?
I made sure to wear bright dresses that contrasted with the color of the walls. In fact, I enjoy sewing. It's one of my hobbies. And I made myself a couple of dresses, and they were perfect because they were really bright and they contrasted with the walls. And sure enough, the dance group moved to another building, and wouldn't you know, the dresses didn't contrast with the walls anymore. So that was disappointing, but I always managed to find something that he could see a little bit better than average. One thing I did do, if you're the partner of somebody who's got low vision, is I made sure to wear a lot of solid colors, because if my entire shirt was one color, then to Pete, it looked like it was that color. But if it was striped or any other print, then all of those colors blended together and it just looked like gray or brown. And then it, even though it might look bright to someone with normal vision, to somebody with low vision, it looked really drab. And so I avoided that.
After we got married, you know, the way we work around the house is also very interesting. And again, we compensate for each other. Some of it is vision and some of it is other things.
You know, you always talk about how when we're doing fix-it projects around the house, when it comes down to lifting and pulling and pushing heavy things around, Nancy often likes some assistance. Well, she can see where the objects are going, but I can't, so she's essentially driving me around. But Nancy loves to do fix-it projects around the house, and again, I'll help out with some of the ones that she's not comfortable using if they require more strength, but I stay away from things like saws and nasty things that can do me damage.
But you're always very good about cleaning up after I've made a mess doing these fix-it projects. And, you know, that's time-consuming, too. So even though he maybe isn't involved in the drilling and the hammering and the sawing and all of that stuff, just knowing that he's available and good-natured about cleaning up whatever mess I've made, that's a big help. And likewise in the kitchen, Pete doesn't like to cook. I know he can. He's actually done it for me a few times.
I'm great at yogurt and cereal.
Yeah, like I said.
No, I actually can cook, but I just don't enjoy it. So she predominantly cooks, and I predominantly clean up. I kind of like that. I can stay in one place right by the sink. Although when you had your shoulder surgery and you couldn't use your arm for several months, I did the cooking, and that's just the way it worked. So even when it comes to cleaning the house, I mean, the way we'll partition tasks is Nancy will often do the dusting and the things that involve a lot of moving around the house or delicate work when it comes to dusting little fragile items around the house. But since I don't like to move so much, if I can stay in one place, I'm a little bit safer and control my movements. So I'll often clean the bathrooms. I mean, for me, cleaning a tub or a shower isn't such a bad thing. I can stay mostly in one place, not have to worry about running into all kinds of objects that might have moved during the cleaning process. So I'll often partition tasks that way.
And I always run the vacuum cleaner because if you've ever been around a vacuum cleaner, you'll know they're quite loud. And, you know, Pete can't see already. If he can't hear anything else that's going on, he gets disoriented in the room and gets turned around. And he's been known to vacuum, you know, when I had my shoulder surgery, for example, but it's not his favorite, and I really don't mind. I borrow his noise-canceling headphones that he uses on the plane, and I use them with the vacuum cleaner, but, you know, I do the part that he can't stand, which is vacuuming. He does the part I can't stand, which is cleaning the bathrooms, and at the end of a couple hours, the house is clean.
You know, also, when we're doing washes, we separate our tasks there also. I always haul the wash down and put it in the washing machine and start it. But there are some clothes that are too delicate and she doesn't like going into the dryer. So she usually dumps things into the dryer. Then when they're done in the dryer, I'll get them out, bring them upstairs and start folding some of them. And we'll partition that task. So the other interesting thing that happens around here is when you like to decorate the house and maybe you want to put up some new curtains or we want to buy a new rug or a new sofa and you have to make sure that the colors match and the patterns match. And these days, I don't see much. I can barely tell if the lights are on sometimes. So I'm not much help in that. But the way I help is often by gauging Nancy's reactions. I mean, I can tell when she's looking at something whether she thinks it's neat or not. I mean, her voice is somehow more excited or she's more agitated. And so this way I can give her some kind of second opinions, even though I can't see these things myself.
And when we're not decorating or cleaning the house, we have to live in the house. And as any blind person will tell you, everything has a place.
Everything.
It better stay in that place.
Well, because if something moves by more than a couple of inches, to me, it's gone. That makes it easy for her to hide my gifts. She can put them in places that I usually don't look by myself. But seriously, I mean, everything in the refrigerator, the orange juice is always on the top left shelf. Our daughter came home a couple of days ago, and she put the orange juice someplace else, and I couldn't find it. Well, you know, I could, but it wasn't immediately where I was looking. It was like, what happened to the orange juice? Didn't I make any?
Another thing that I did for Pete, because he sometimes walks into things, is we put a bench in the garage right near the entrance to the house, and he kept walking into it. And so I kept wrapping foam around the corners, around the edges. Finally, I wound up with the whole thing wrapped in foam. And then I put some vinyl over top of that, basically to keep the foam in and keep the foam from getting wrecked. And now it looks like we have this very elegant upholstered bench in the garage, but it's really just padded to keep Pete from whacking his shins. We always found ways to be efficient, especially back in the day when we had two big jobs and two small children. This is less important now that we don't have jobs and the kids have moved out. But because Pete can't really do a full grocery run and get enough food for four people for a week while I'm at home doing home repairs or vice versa, a lot of things had to happen sequentially, and that meant that time was really at a premium, especially since we only ever had one driver and one car. And so efficiency was really important to us. Well, life isn't all full of practicalities. Sometimes you have to have fun.
A lot of our activities are very active. As we said, we met dancing, but you know, shortly after we got together, we were running and hiking and biking and doing all kinds of things. And in doing those activities, we always have to make some kind of accommodations. For example, I can't bicycle by myself.
We bought a tandem bicycle. And then after some number of years, I got carpal tunnel from doing too much computing at work. And so although we always had a tandem because of Pete's limitations, we needed a recumbent because of mine. So we bought a recumbent tandem bicycle, which is a pretty uncommon sight, and we get all manner of comments when people see us on this thing.
But it sure was a lot of fun. And then we also make accommodations when we go hiking. So I've learned to hike with a lekkie, which is a strong kind of pole that people use for hiking or sometimes for cross-country skiing, and it's adjustable in length. But I find that I use that half as a cane with one hand and half for a little bit of stability if I step on a rock that isn't quite sturdy enough or shifts around. And then my other hand I put on Nancy's shoulder, and I'll follow back and forth.
Well, and the other thing is, when we're hiking, the terrain is, shall we say, less predictable than on a sidewalk. And so we'll come upon obstacles that require a little bit of forewarning. So we've developed a little lexicon of terms of things that are really important to convey to Pete. So if there's a low-hanging branch, I'll just tell him to duck. And I don't often distinguish between rocks and roots and other manners of unevenness. I'll just tell him there's a lump coming up.
The other place where we make some interesting compromises is in movies. Every once in a while, we wind up at a subtitled movie in a movie theater by accident. So we try to find a place in the middle of the theater, and Nancy is nice enough to lean by me and sort of head-to-head, and we'll whisper a little bit as she tells me what's going on. So I think you've heard a little bit about us and how we balance out each other in our lives. And as Nancy said, we've been together for just a touch over 30 years, and it's all been wonderfully enjoyable.
Thank you, Nancy and Pete, for sharing your family with us. I would like to end this session with information that many have found helpful. This first bit of information is a dozen helpful hints for people to remember when living with a visually impaired person. Use contrasting colors such as black and white, black and yellow, or blue and yellow. Limit the number of colors, as too many can be confusing. When communicating in writing, avoid cursive and use a dark, bold pen or marker, not a pencil. When communicating by email in rich text, set the font size to at least 16 points and use easy-to-read fonts like Verdana or Arial. Take time to learn about low-vision technology and devices, the impaired person. Use contrasting colors such as black and white, black and yellow, or blue and yellow. Limit the number of colors, as too many can be confusing. When communicating in writing, avoid cursive and use a dark, bold pen or marker, not a pencil. When communicating by email in rich text, set the font size to at least 16 points and use easy-to-read fonts like Verdana or Arial. Take time to learn about low vision technology and devices. Start by visiting lowvision.preventblindness.org/resources-2. Learn simple ways to help the person adapt to the home environment for safe and easier living. Many ideas will be found in the free self-help guide to non-visual skills at lowvision.preventblindness.org/publications. Help the person see with his or her ears by describing locations, people, and objects. Use the clock face method to help the person locate food on the plate. Include the person in social events and encourage participation in a support group. Visit www.mdsupport.org/support to find live, internet, and telephone groups. When guiding, allow the person to maintain contact by grasping your arm. On stairs, remain one step ahead. When guiding to a seat, allow the person to touch the chair or bench first, then seat themselves. Some verbal description by you of the style of seating might be helpful. Emphasize the importance of good nutrition and exercise. Several good presentations on these topics may be found in the ILVSG Audiovisual Library at www.mdsupport.org. Low vision rehabilitation by a trained professional is an important part of the continuum of care for low vision individuals. Again, the ILVSG Audiovisual Library has many excellent presentations on this topic. Next, the rules of vision etiquette are also important to keep in mind. You may have heard them before, but it doesn't hurt to review them periodically. Number one, speak in a natural, conversational tone. It's not necessary to speak loudly, but enunciation is important, as we may not be able to see your lips. Number two, address us by name when possible, especially in crowded places. Three, address us personally, not through someone else. Four, greet us when we enter the room so we know you're present. Five, indicate the end of a conversation when you leave us so we aren't left talking to the air. Six, feel free to use words that refer to vision. We also use the words see, look, watch, etc. Seven, do not leave us standing in free space when you're acting as a guide. Eight, be calm and clear about what to do if you see us about to encounter a dangerous situation. 9. If you think we need help, ask first. Don't assume your help is wanted. 10. When offering assistance, never take us by the arm. If you offer your arm instead, we can follow slightly behind and anticipate changes. 11. Never take a hold of a white cane. And finally, 12, never pet or interfere with a guide dog while it's on duty. This ends our program for this month. I hope you found the topic informational and inspiring, and that you will share it with others who may benefit. Thank you for your attendance.